I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Sans Pants Radio, Australia's most well-read podcast network. Hey everyone, welcome to Bookish. I'm George Dimorellis. This is a show where we ask you what's your story and what does it say about you. Today on the show we have TV personality and self-proclaimed D-grade celebrity, Evie Jones. How you doing, Evie?
Yay! D-grade, maybe E-grade. Sometimes I can slip up to a C. I'm good.
2019 seems to have been a pretty much, I think it might be touching on the C status potentially.
Yeah, see, I was definitely starting to get to go somewhere, and then 2020 happened. So 2021 is my year, I think. I might get up to a C minus.
Exactly. Yeah. I forgot about how, that would be frustrating because you would have gone from, because things were on very much on a good trajectory and then just shattered.
Although, I look at people that did 2020, the beginning of 2020, the same things that I did, like go on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, and I came off I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here and Gogglebox, and my trajectory just kept climbing and climbing. These poor people went on the 2020 season and nothing. Like it just
That's
nothing.
It, and it's finished. Yeah.
So
they can't even leverage it.
I think I had at least, I'm lucky I got a year, nearly a year out of it. They got nothing.
That's true. Nice to know some people are worse off than you.
That's like the Indian philosophy. Apparently when there was an Indian man that said to me, do you know why Indian people are so happy all the time? And I said, no. He said, because our philosophy is there's always someone less off than you. You're always better. And I was like, what about if you're at the absolute bottom, like a homeless person in the street? He said, well, there's always cockroaches. And I was like, wow, that's a good way of looking at life. to be happy, there's always someone worse off than you.
But also, does he mean like cockroaches as an animal of suffering worse, or does he mean you could just be infested with cockroaches as well as homeless?
Well, now I'm questioning it.
Because like cockroaches love it life.
I thought he meant, cockroaches, I thought he meant there's always fleas and cockroaches, they are the... Yeah, but they would be loving life.
Yeah, what do you
mean? They're on hosts of bodies and they're seeing things and...
Exactly. That's they're just eating, kicking back, not having anxiety.
Yeah. Not knowing. Talk about living in the moment.
Pure. Yeah, it's Buddhist. It's Zen-like. I always say that about chickens.
Chickens, yeah.
My parents used to have chickens and I would just stare at them all day because there's something so calming about looking at a chicken because you're like, this chick does not know what is going on in any second. It's just purely in the moment. It's weirdly calming. It's therapeutic.
That's so true. And you know what? Yeah. I really want to get chickens. This is a poignant moment for me because I, as you'll find out with the book that is my favorite book of all time, it is all about omens and, waiting for signs and things. And I was really wanted to get chickens. And now you've just given me.
You've been thinking about getting them.
I think chickens are beautiful. I'd love to have a cow, but I can't because cows are my favorite animal, but I can't have a cow. So
it's true. Yeah, inner city Melbourne might not work for a cow. So yes, get some chickens. It's great. But yes, in terms of your Indian phrase, I don't know. I don't know about it.
Questioning it now too.
Yeah, and so but like it is true. And like to be fair, there'll be one person who's just has it the worst off out of everyone. So really, this applies to literally 7.98 billion people, whatever it is now. There's just one dude somewhere who. Yeah, everyone can look at it and be like, yeah,
Well, what does he do?
Well, at least not him.
What does he do, though?
Well, he can take solace. In fact, you know who's worse off? The second worst off person. Because the worst off person, like there is, you get to be the ultimate victim in sense. Like, I'm not saying that's a win, but you get to at least have that. So the second
worst person. Or you can say, I am something that no one else is. I'm the worst person in the world and you can't beat me. So he's a winner at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's weird how, like, I remember hearing this thing and my friend was like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. But for me, I don't know why, but it felt weirdly special in a weird way. The fact that everyone on the planet, there was one split second when you were born where you were officially the youngest person on the planet.
Oh, my God. One split second. Yeah, even less than a second.
Maybe less than a second, but there was a moment when you were born that you were the youngest person in the human race.
Wow.
For even if it was just 1 second.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Which is kind of cool.
Yes.
Isn't it? I don't know. Yes. My friend was like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. But I'm like, no, I don't know. I don't know why, but it's kind of cool.
Yeah, because it actually exists. You won't ever meet anyone in the moment of, but it actually exists.
Yes. Yeah.
And you can't.
It's a real thing, yeah.
You can't deny it.
Yeah, you can't. It's just that's why it's like so logical that it's like nothing. But I don't know. There's something weirdly cool about it.
Interesting.
I don't know. I don't know.
Cool and interesting.
I'm just a romantic. I'm just a romantic.
I like it.
So for people listening, I'll give some background on you. You can cut in and let me know if I'm getting anything wrong here. But essentially, you seem to have sprung to prominence with Gogglebox, which is from 2015 to 2018, which if people don't know, is basically you sitting on a couch with a friend watching TV and commenting on it.
Drinking wine with our dogs, yes.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, that's – and the wine stuff as well, which probably leads to some comments they have to edit out of the show as well.
It did all the time. All the time. There were episodes we didn't remember recording. We'd get so blind.
Oh, my God. That just sounds dangerous.
They would buy us wine. Because they knew they'd get better stuff out of us if we were drunk.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, as long as you don't slur or swear too much.
Well, that's why it got to the point where we could tell. We'd be watching something and we'd be like, "Oh, you are off your face there." Like, you know, it we sound like we know. You know, we're kind of like just a bit loose, but there was be something they'd be like, "Are you shit?" What was that? But the other person had said something quite legible, so that had to get kept in. We'd be like, oh, God, thank God no one notices these things.
I
went out on a night just with a girlfriend. We went and watched a band, and then we ended up after the band, like we walked outside and these two guys said, oh, we're heading on to another bar. Do you want to join, like jump in a cab? We're like, yeah, why not? So we hung out with these guys all night long. And then at the end of the night, about 3 a.m, I was getting in another cab. We were all getting in different cabs. And this guy said, it was so nice to meet you. I just wanted to let you know that I'm one of the editors on Gogglebox. And I went, I was like, oh, my God. And then it just sunk in. It hit me, all the shit that he must hear and see that he has to get rid of. And I looked at him and he's looked at me as I clocked it. He could see it and he goes, that's why I didn't tell you earlier. He goes, you're so inappropriate.
Oh, no.
I was like, okay, I've got to go. Bye. Yeah, so.
Yeah, it's for network TV. There's a lot of comments you say to a friend, which is a joke, which would be taken very badly if presented on TV. Just the purest form.
I mean, at the end of the day, all of those kind of shows, you can see how, I mean, after you've done those kind of shows, just how they have painted someone to be the villain. And it's often people saying, oh, but look, if you say it, you've got to own it. It's like we all say it. It's just whether they show it or not. Because we all say shit, really inappropriate stuff. And if they want to make you look bad, they can do it. And if they want to make you look like a hero, they can. They can just make you be seen saying the good stuff. So.
And it's true. And like even that's – it can even just show you reacting to something and that can be enough to frame you badly or good.
Absolutely.
It's like the thing.
They were
if there's some horrific documentary and then you're laughing at a friend immediately.
Totally. Like, and they do these snatch and grabs. Have you heard of those? Like a Franken – they call them Franken Franken grabs, I think they call them. They're two different terms
like
for the same thing, which is if you don't see someone saying it, they have put your words and they've made a sentence out of it and they've put it over the top of some footage vision of you. It could be the back of your head shaking your head and your, you know, audio, if you listen really closely, it sounds a little bit automated because they've put all your words together, like from all different recordings.
Oh, well, they've actually created a sentence.
Yes, it's called a Frankengrab. Yeah. And the
They'll actually make you say something which is not – you didn't actually say.
It happens all the time, especially on shows like Maths and Bachelor in Paradise and The Bachelors. Like there are so many Frankengrabs that they – yeah, it's quite amazing that if you go back and actually listen, you can see exactly where it happens. So the director will call the editor and say, I need you to get George saying – I just don't like fat girls. And they will find you saying those five words at some point and they will pop them together and they can change the intonation of it. They can do anything they want.
What?
And all they have is show you shaking your head or going, making a face and then turning away and they'll put your – it's incredible when you know. And I didn't believe it.
Oh, my God. I thought that was like –
I didn't believe it until I met someone like producers that said, oh, yeah, we do that all the time.
Just because I'm sure I'm just like, I don't like fat girls. Like, as in, but it's.
That's it.
But they make it smooth.
If you listen really closely, you can hear the automation of it. I don't like fat girls, but they'll make it really smooth and they'll change.
And I'm sitting there laughing. My moustache.
Or you're
my God, I'd be hated by all of Australia.
And you're blowing air into your cheeks. It looks like you're making a fat face or something, you know? It's incredible.
Oh, my God.
What they can do. To be fair, they're artists. They're very good at what they do. Very, very good.
But, like, I just would think that was that'd be illegal because that's like – you didn't say
that.
No, you know what I mean?
There's no regulations. That's the one thing that I am very passionate about with reality TV is how there's just – it's such a new genre. There's no unions or regulations for it. So there is no protection for these people. In the UK, they're bringing in regulations because there's been suicides from these kind of things. So, but, you know, Australia is very, very far behind in so many kind of things like that. So it's going to take us quite a while. When you say to someone, I wouldn't go on reality TV if you have any kind of insecurities because it's going to fuck you up pretty badly.
Yeah, yeah.
You can guarantee people will just go, oh, no, that won't happen to me.
I just like you've blown my mind. Like, you know, I'm willing to accept them framing things badly. I'm willing to even accept them going to the length of taking something you're saying and putting it in a different context, like as a voiceover for something else, because that's all wrong.
Yeah.
But to change the actual words means they're just doing whatever they want. Like, because you can't, that's
creating.
You're screwed. Like,
it's called softly scripting. Oh, well, softly scripting is when the producer is doing, you know, you're doing the interviews, the IVs, the voxies. So the producer's like, you know, so you really are like an overseas model. So you'd call yourself an international model and they'd be like, no, I'm not an international model. And change that. That's the whole softly scripted kind of thing. But now with the Frankengrabs, not now, they've been doing that ever since. They could. We've never had anyone talking about it.
I'm shocked.
Yeah.
I've terrifying.
Shocked someone for today. It is quite terrifying just how good they can be at making their own narrative. There's a lot of reality people coming out now. I'm really interested in this kind of thing. So I watch YouTube videos from contestants from X Factors and America, UK Idol and, you know, UK Big Brother and shows like that where they're defending themselves. They're actually using footage and saying, okay, over the top saying, this is what's happened here. This is what the actual conversation was. And so it's fascinating to me whether you want to believe it or not. There's some people that just be like, no, you said it. I heard your voice say it. So you're an asshole. And but me personally, I'm like, no, I know exactly what they're doing. And it's really fascinating to watch some people now coming out and saying, that happened to me and this is how it happened. And,
yeah,
you know,
I mean, that's actually like good on them for putting in the effort to
absolutely
correct the record, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what else have they got to do? They've been absolutely bollocked by the public and, you know, hated, sent death threats and things like that because people think that they're really evil. And you're like, you got to do what you got to do if you care.
Yeah, that's so that was Gogglebox, which okay. And we'll probably touch on it again, I'm sure. But after that, basically, you had the like a kind of. Yes, like you said, 2019 was a very good year for you. When I'm a celebrity, get me out of here.
Yeah.
As one of these D-list celebrities that you get to make fun of and you would have made fun of for a few years before it.
Yeah.
And then after that, you were on a bunch of like shows as kind of like personality coming on and
just
having a bit of fun.
Yeah, people like to hear and watch me be silly. So it was good. I was like, I'll do anything. Great. Awesome. And then
you don't sound that enthused there, to be honest.
No, it was good. It was it was fantastic.
Awesome. I'm really up for it.
I just found it I've always found it quite weird that people get so into what I think and say about things. And that's where that kind of was like, isn't that weird that people are happy to just I mean, I guess it's like any entertainment, you know, you would question that. I think that you know, stand-up comedians are so renownedly known for having depression and that kind of thing, insecurities. And, you know, I think that's where that comes from. They're like, they question that insecurity in them would be like, really? People really find me funny? Even though they know they are, they question it. And, oh, am I going to keep being funny or is it going to go away? That kind of thing. I can see where that would come from because you do question, why are you listening to me?
Yeah, no, that's very true. So did you have like, well, but I mean, so you, when you were younger, did you find like you were usually the more chatty one? People would love hanging out and hearing all that stuff. So it wasn't a complete surprise to be like, oh,
no.
It turns out.
It was, it really was a matter of time. And I knew it. My mother always said, it'll happen. It's going to happen. You're just going to become famous for being yourself. And it was really weird because I did drama school and I was a professional singer for quite a while. And I was always so semi-successful, like really not, unless, you know, in my singing, I would incorporate a lot of talking. The voice was like, whatever. And the acting, I was always stereotyped in being sent to auditions and things, you know, or you have to be that fat, funny girl, or, you know, you have to be the one who's going to be bullied and things like that, which really pissed me off. And my ego would be like, no, I want to be the hot main girl. Like, why am I being sent for these kind of roles? So it wasn't until I got Gogglebox that I finally became successful. And it was simply because I was just being myself. And that turned out to be the most popular thing that I've done, you know, that people seem to resonate with. And then I had to reconcile that with myself because it's like, oh, I've just spent 20 years trying to be someone else and not making it. Now I'm just finally kind of giving that away and giving it up. When you get to that point where you're like, oh, let it go. Then, you know, this, and I also worked in TV. I was a public, worked on Switchboard at Channel 7 and then went into publicity. So I worked behind the scenes for years in TV and I would often get asked, you know, would you audition for this or would you, you know, apply for that, that kind of thing. And I would just say, no. I know enough about reality TV to never go on Big Brother or ever go on, you know. I just was so convinced I would get the bad edit, knowing that the bad edit existed, that I would say no. And then when Gogglebox came along, it was a friend who works in TV who was working for Endemol at the time. And he said, listen, I know you say no all the time to these kind of things, but this show I think is something that is going to be okay. It's not reality. It's observational documentary. They really are going to be fly on the wall. They will edit it, but only edit out. They won't be, you know, having any kind of a narrative. So I was like, I looked at it. I looked at the UK one and I said to the casting director, are you guys modeling it on the UK one? Because I really like the look of that. And she said, we're doing the exact one, like exact one with Australians. So I was like, you know what? That does look kind of good because you're just going to show what our opinions are. And if I honestly thought this, it's going to last a couple of episodes. Like, no one will watch it, and it'll just be something fun to have in the back cat, you know, show the grandkids or something. Oh, look what your nan did, you know, for two days once. Not ever.
She was a star once, kids.
She had 5 minutes, but never knew that it was going to blow up the way it did. Like, and it's still, I think it's in its 12th, 13th season now. I left after season 8, and it's going gangbusters.
Oh, we left that many.
Yeah, we did 4 years. We did, so 2 seasons a year. So,
Okay, right.
8 seasons, enough. 4 years.
That's so.
It was great.
It's going to be the easiest. Like, you literally just sit there and watch TV, drink wine with a friend, and just talk nonsense about what's going on.
The only bad thing about it was that they would send us the footage that they wanted us to watch. So if you really liked something, you didn't get your entire episode, and you'd get really frustrated. You'd be like, wait, what happened to Harold? Why didn't they show us any of Harold? You know, and you're ruined for when you watch it properly.
Yeah. So it would just be like a 5-minute clip that they want you to talk about. Or 10 minutes or something.
Sometimes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because you've got to have a week's worth.
But how you meant to comment? Yeah. It's just weird because it's like you wouldn't even have the context for what you're looking at.
It was funny because Angie was always very honest in her opinions about things. I was a bit more savvy with what they wanted. And she would be watching it going, oh, this is shit. I don't understand any of this. This is all out of, this is out of sequence and nah, there's just not enough. And I'm like, you can't say that because they're not going to use it. She go, I don't care.
Yeah.
So,
But I guess it makes sense from their point of view, actually, when you think about it, because everyone watching the show is seeing it like you are, where they're not getting any context. So they kind of need to make it so you're only commenting on, like, with you're not applying any previous knowledge. That actually does make sense, I guess, in that sense. Let's keep going with this. So we've done up to there. So you did I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, which is another reality thing. You don't know these shows and stuff. Look, let's go to the book and then we'll just jump back around, because it's interesting, even how you talk about how you were doing it for 20 years before you even got this. But I'm sure that'll be let's start. So your book of choice for today, which is, again, these are all in the title, everyone knows it's coming, but your book of choice is
The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho.
Nice. Which is it's a big one.
Have you read it?
Yeah. Of course, yeah.
Of course.
I mean, I probably shouldn't say it like that, but it is pretty, like, it's very short, and it was very popular.
Yeah, it's a short book, and that's why I like being able to reread it so often. You know, as we go through life now, our attention spans are just getting shorter and shorter. So it's one book that can still, you know, hold its ground because it's so short. You can just still read it in a week, because so many books just don't get, you know, they just don't get what they're supposed to get anymore, because, you know, people are just so used to hearing sound bites or getting their YouTube video clips that don't go any more than 2 minutes, and they're just training their brain. I always say to people all the time on my Instagram, make sure you read, keep reading. It really will stave off, I think, dementia and Alzheimer's, but it just helps you with conversation, because you can carry on a conversation for a lot longer when you read books, I think, because you are used to going back to something and having to remember what you've read and then, you know, carrying on the rest of the book. And it's incredible.
That's an amazing theory. I don't know if I agree with that, but I love it.
I know people that used to read, don't read anymore because they just go, oh, I just don't have the time. It's like bullshit. No one doesn't have the time to read, but they do have the time to read, you know, Instagram posts or, you know, memes or something like that. And their attention span in conversations are really short, very different to how they once were, I found.
Really?
Yeah, this is my own personal experiment.
Okay. This doesn't sound like a very official experiment. I got to be honest.
It's not
very personal.
It's not double blind or anything like that. Yeah. There's no placebo.
No control. There's no population size at all.
I'm not even sure how big the group study is. It gets big.
It's just you.
It's just one me. Person. I'm just studying.
It's your
myself.
Opinion.
It's just, at the end of the day, it's just an opinion.
Yeah, maybe you've got the short attention span. And you're like, what are you guys talking about? All right.
You know, I do find that my attention span gets worse when I don't read.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that could be the knife edge you're balancing on.
If I read a chapter every night of a book, a chapter or two, then my attention, like I just seem, it's almost meditative. Like, you know, you have the focus, a better focus. Whereas if I don't, I get a bit scrambled and, you know. So it is just me.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, it's true. Again, I'm going to overanalyze it probably to death and ruin anything, but I'd almost say the one thing that you could say about something like that, though, is that if you're reading a chapter or two a night, that probably means you're just on top of things in general. So that's kind of part of it, you know, like, because it just means you're probably going to bed and you're not getting drunk. You've probably got a bit of regularity in your life, so you're just generally more stable. So correlation versus,
but you know, that's kind of my... which came first, George, the chicken or the egg?
Don't you know they've answered that?
Yeah, have they? Who? What?
Yeah. Well, it's pretty obvious. It's the egg came first because evolution is two almost chickens had an egg and then that was the first chicken.
True.
Yeah, sorry to ruin that as well. No, that's kind of what I do on here.
Just,
actually, no, they've answered that. That's not interesting at all. speaking of chickens, while we're on the chicken-themed episode, it turns out, but have you heard the joke? Have you ever thought about this? You know the old joke, why did the chicken cross the road?
Mm.
To get to the other side?
To get to the other side.
Do you get that joke? Because it turns out the other side is death.
Oh, so it gets hit by a car?
Why did the chicken cross the road? To get to the other side. It's a pun on death.
Oh, is that real? Or is that just someone overthinking it?
Well, because what is it otherwise? Why did the chicken cross the road?
I always thought it was because
the other side is in.
Is it? Is it? It's just the other side of the road. That's why I crossed it. I think it's just really simple.
That's too alt. Too alt comedy for 500 years ago. Like, they love the plays on words back there. I don't actually know. It could be a recent realization, but it's very convenient that it's exactly that as well, though. So I don't know.
I reckon it's just a really simple way of finding out if someone's an idiot or not. Like, when you ask the question, if they don't know the answer, then they're just not thinking.
But see, even there, do you think the chicken is planning to go to the other side? It's just walking. Why did the chicken cross the road? Because it felt like it. It's not to get to the other side.
No,
it's living in the moment. It's because the ground feels good under its foot, or it's got a seed in its neck. It's got nothing to do with going to the other side. So actually, it's factually incorrect as well. The only way it makes sense is as a suicidal chicken.
Right. Well, that's very dark. I'm okay with that, but it's very dark.
Well, it's a shock. A lot of people don't know. Yeah, there you go.
All right.
Well, keep
going. We digress.
Okay. So we have digressed into suicidal chickens. To get back on track, The Alchemist.
Yes.
So short attention spans, which it seems like maybe – I'm starting to get what you were doing on Gogglebox, just taking something and just going off on 15 tangents. To go back to that, so yes, it's a short book. It's an inspiring book. Yeah. Basically, it's like, I mean, the story is not really almost relevant, but it's basically about a little boy who goes on a journey because he has a vision and he just meets a few people along the way, has some realizations about his life along the way. And that's kind of...
It's a fable.
Story. So,
it's a fable. Very simple, very... And funnily enough, the first time you read it, you see it as a bit of a fable. You're just like, oh, that's just a really nice story and got, you know... made me think about things, a few things, and then you kind of let it go. I find that I kept coming back to it, and every time I speak to people about the book, they're like, yeah, it's a book that when I reread, I always get something new from. I'm like, me too. I thought it was such a simple story, and it is, but that was it in the beginning. Every single time I read it, and I read it, I reckon, in the first time, like mid-90s, so 25 years. I haven't read it now for probably 5 years, but I used to read it every year just to get something out of it and see if there was something new. Like 20 years of reading it and getting something new out of it was like, oh, this is like an alchemist. This is like a little piece of metal that's turning into gold. Like there's something, it changes all the time. Because I think as you grow, it stays the same, but it doesn't. It changes with you. How does it do that?
Yeah, it's just, I guess, it's because it's so a fable, I think, it's open to so much. So it is where you draw out the things that, because it's not being specific about this thing, or it's not being lecturing or anything like that. It's just telling this story. So, and it's got all these elements involved. So yeah, I can see what you mean by that. And it's actually making me think I should reread it.
Yeah.
I haven't read it. I read it once like 20 years ago. I've never read it again.
Reread it. Let me know what you think of it again. Because you really do get certain parts of the story that weren't important to you that become important to you as your life changes. You're like, oh, that's saying something to me this time. Never did. That part of the book. Yeah.
Can you think of any example of that, or is that what you felt, but it's hard to remember? Yeah, it's hard to remember something that specific.
Yeah, no, I think actually I can. There was like parts of the story, you know, him being at home and then being told by a witch to leave home used to resonate a lot with me. And then it wasn't so much the journey of him. It was often where he got to at the end, and the end of the book, how, you know, what happens and why, what he becomes was quite important to me. And then at different times through the 20 years of reading it, my importance of where I was in my life would look at the journey rather than where he'd come from or where he ended up. I'd look at parts of him doing the journey from Spain to Egypt and take point. Oh, I'd be like, oh, I never found this bit that as interesting as I do right now, because that's kind of where I am in life, you know, meeting someone like he does, you know, he meets a few people along the way. Just the priorities of how I had them in the beginning to how I had them going throughout reading them over 20 years. I was like, oh, I'm really resonating with what that person says to him. Never really resonated with me before. So watching that kind of story happen and how much it changes for me, I don't know, though, if other books would do that. Maybe they would all do that. They probably would. I've just never read a book that many times like I have with that one.
Yeah. Because it has to mean something special for you to keep going back to it. But no,
I think because it's short.
They don't. a good, yeah. Oh, we've picked up on that. I like that and Grug.
And
my two favorite books.
Oh, my God.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, but no, the rereading it, I think not the last time I reread The Alchemist, I got because I was always so offended. Funnily enough, this is my favorite book, but it did offend me when I was younger, because when I first started reading that book, I was of an age when, you know, you really think you know everything about everything and you have the answers and you talk in absolutes. And so that book, even though it opened my eyes to so much thinking and questioning, the end of the book, which I won't ruin for people who haven't read it, but I was so angry. Okay. Can I say what the ending is?
Yeah, yeah. This show's all about
ruining things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's The Alchemist. Everyone should have read it by now. And again, you can read it. This is especially one you can ruin, and it doesn't matter because it's definitely not about the ending. The title says The Alchemist. Come on, guys.
Yeah. Well, the very end where it says, oh, it was all about God. And I was like, oh, because I was so anti-religion at the time. And I was like, I was so angry that this wonderful story had turned out to just be another, you know, Seventh-day Adventist at my door going, have you heard the
word? It was actually Christianity all along.
Yes, it was just about God. You know, yeah, it was like, oh, really? That's it? I was expecting so much more. And, you know.
I love that that's the lesson. You instead of being like, oh, maybe there's something to the God stuff and there's good stuff to take from that, you're just like, nah.
No. And I was like, well, that
God means this as well. Now I hate everyone and Spaniards especially.
Yeah. Oh, but it's funny because the book was so good that I would keep reading it. And then I got to a point, you know, over time where the ending didn't offend me anymore. So I was like, oh, well, aren't I growing up and starting to think things and, you know, broadening my thinking. Mm. So, Yeah, even the ending changes now for me. And I'm like, oh, it's how you interpret it though, isn't it? You know, if I talk to people about the ending and, oh, it's well, you know, I don't talk in absolutes anymore. I don't think this is, you know, what it is, what it isn't, which I think people in their 20s are so incredibly good at. It's the one thing that we're so good at in our 20s is talking in absolutes.
Yeah, you're going to look, it's why not? You're in your 20s. Talk in absolutes. Enjoy it. Life will correct you.
It really will. It will sit you on your ass. It really will. I think the older people, I imagine the older people that would have been around me in my 20s, because I was just such a, this is what it is and I'll tell you how it is. They must have just been like their eyes would have almost fallen out of their heads the amount of times they would have rolled them back. They just been like, oh, here we go, another fucking 20-year-old. It's just learned the, you know, lessons of life and knows.
It's like, I'm going to be a theatre actor, I'm going to be a singer, I'm going to be everything. Like, you're going to be sitting on a couch drinking wine and you're like, no, I'm not, never.
You know, my mother always said, when I first told her that I had Gogglebox, I said, you are going to die when I tell you what job I've just gotten. And she's like, what? And I said, remember how you always said to me, you can't just sit on your ass and think that everything's just going to come to you. I'll be like, guess what? I'm going to sit on my ass and everything is just going to come to me and I'm going to be on TV doing it. She was like, oh, my God, only you could have that happen. I was like, see?
I've got to be honest, that does go against basically the whole thing of The Alchemist. Yeah. It's the exact opposite. It's just no journey, just sitting there and everything happens.
Well, you know, that's a journey in itself. Sometimes I would get up off the couch, make some food and sit back down. Is that not a journey?
I really thought you were going to say something more profound there.
I know.
Then you get up and make snacks.
Yeah, sometimes I think that is quite profound. Sometimes I change the snacks up.
Just because you're saying it in a softer voice doesn't make it profound all of a sudden. Yeah, no, actually, yeah, sometimes I would go and sit on the toilet and use it and come back.
Sometimes things would move me. Sometimes things would move.
Look, I'm too polite to even say the. Well, that was because, like, the thing is, firstly, that's true. I think in terms of a journey isn't necessarily a journey. Although, mm-hmm. you know, that can teach you stuff about where you're going and the things you're doing and stuff. Which makes it funny. And actually, here's a random one I'm just going to just realize. For you, you mm-hmm. started off sitting on your couch. Your mum's like, don't sit on their couch, go do something. Just like a prophecy saying, go find your riches somewhere. And you're like, all right, I'm going to go and try and get an actor thing. And then you mm-hmm. go and do all that. And then in the end, the treasure was on your couch all along.
All along. It was always there.
Actual story of The Alchemist.
Yeah.
When you think about it.
Thinking about doing this podcast has got me thinking about the similarities of the story of Santiago and me. What are they? And I'm like, oh, my God, I really have kind of gone back to where I didn't want to be or was told I shouldn't be and went on this massive journey of a career, not just a career, but so many other things, and ended up being back where I was and realizing that's okay just to be where you are and who you are rather than doing the whole trying to change and, you know, but and learning so many things along the way and meeting so many people along the way that, you know, teach you things. So But for me, the book was really all about realizing, funnily, chickens, living mm-hmm. in the minute, in the moment, like really living in the moment. There was a part of the book where one of the people he meets says to him something like, you know, you have to learn to live in the moment, because if you make that good, the rest, the future is good. You can't think about the future. You have to just kind of make where you are right now really good. And about probably around the same time, maybe a couple of years after I'd first read The Alchemist, I got right into like Eckhart Tolle and those kind of self-help books where they were teaching you to live in the moment, like the power of now and all of this kind of mm-hmm. thing. And that became a really big thing in my life because it gave me so much excuse to stop worrying. I didn't know how to get rid of anxiety that I had, you know, shame of things that I'd done or fear of things that I was going to do. And those books really gave me the permission to not think about the future or the past. And I always felt like, oh, this is a really stupid thing to do, but it's so nice to just, oh, and I'm like, oh, if Eckhart Tolle says it, I'm not going to, you know. Turns out it was one of the best things that you can do is just live in the moment. So The Alchemist was the beginning of that, but I didn't really realize it, how poignant it was or how important it was until, you know, kind of thinking about the book again for this particular podcast, thinking, oh, wow, there really was something so much in that. Because I think in the book there's chicken, like they talk about chickens.
Do they?
Or
goat.
I don't
remember it that well.
There was animals. And I remember I went and saw Eckhart Tolle speak when he came to Australia. And apart from being the weirdest person I'd ever seen in my life, he wouldn't let anyone applaud. It was just the weirdest thing.
What?
You can't give him thanks or gratitude or anything like that. He just, you know, so he had to walk. He wouldn't come out if there was a noise, like any kind of a gratitude noise. And I was just like, oh my God, this is so weird. And then when he was leaving, he was like, remember, don't clap. I don't want it. He's a German. So that's my German accent.
Is he German?
Mm.
That Austrian. Is. I did not know he was so – I didn't know that it was – that's hilarious.
So
he's
weird.
Like – he's the book is – The Power of Now is – it's deep. It goes hard. Like as in it's probably the most eye-opening for people to be like, whoa, this is – like, and I'm not saying it's wrong or right, whatever, but like as in it's very much – wow, that's some serious living in the moment. He's proclaiming, and it gets very mystical in the way he says it, which is obviously just a way to pitch an actual idea, which has a lot of truth to it. So do you do much meditation or anything like that?
Yeah, I meditate every day. I learnt transcendental meditation in about 2009 with my boss. At the time I was a nanny, and my boss, who is the editor-in-chief at Vogue, her and I wanted to, you know, get more centered about things in life. And she had a friend who used to be a movie producer who'd become a meditation coach. And so she said, you know, do you want to do this course with me? It's just one night a week. And I was like, yeah, I really want to do it. And I think she got nothing out of it. I got everything out of it. And I've used it ever since, because it was such a simple way of meditating. So I tried so many times to learn meditation and I just couldn't do it. Couldn't get my head, my mind to do what was supposed to be done. And transcendental meditation is all about one mantra. It's just one word and it's just in your head. And I just found that worked for me. It just worked. I could do it anywhere, anytime, and I still find it's my go-to.
Right. How long do you do a day?
I'm maybe 10 minutes. I'm supposed to do 20 minutes twice a day, but to be honest, I only do about 10 minutes every night. And it's the only thing really that gets me to sleep.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
It's just I've looked at it. Transcendental, the only problem is it's so bloody expensive compared to everything else.
I didn't realize how much it was because I was invited along. And then when I started trying to get people into it, they'd be like, oh, my God, I can't afford that. And I'm like, how much is it? And I'd look and I'm like, oh, that's ridiculous. I could teach you how to do it. My other friend who had done it said, do not ever do that. Don't ever think that you can teach that kind of thing. I'm like, it's just a word. And she goes, no, everyone gets a different word. I'm like, oh. Okay. Well,
that's, yeah, but that makes sense. I'm suspicious of that part of it. That just sounds like a, I don't know, the everyone gets a word thing. I don't know about that. But
yeah.
The idea is literally you just repeat the word over and over in your head.
Yes.
And breathe. And that's it.
But it wasn't, it wasn't until the last day, like the last time we went, when it wasn't just us sitting there and her going, we're just meditating. Pretty much your entire hour away is just sitting there with her doing the exact same thing, which is closing your eyes and meditating. And then at the end she'd say, do you have any questions? And every time you'd ask her a question, she'd repeat the same answer. Just take it back to your mantra. And I'm like, and then the very last class, finally she started to tell us about the science behind it and, you know, how it was working. And I was like, oh, so this I could have used in the beginning.
That's hilarious.
But it obviously was taught in a certain way.
Yeah.
So you get the answers at the end. I was just everything happens for a reason, and it did, I guess. Yeah. It just something worked for me really, really well with that. So, yeah, it went well with the book. It went well with that kind of philosophy in life of living in the moment, and there is nothing better to live in the moment than meditation.
Hmm. Were you were you back then, like, was it a bit of hard times or was it kind of whatever? You
just got chugging along? When I read that or when?
Yeah, and when you started going through the meditation stuff as well, like.
Oh, yeah.
Was it a tough time, I guess?
Yeah, those were during my years of working a job that I didn't want to be in, constantly trying to get into a career that I couldn't get into. So, you know, really hard.
It's a lot of self-doubt and. Hating and powerlessness in a lot of ways.
And a lot of partying and a lot of, you know, doing all the things that young people do or you do, trying to find your way through life and, you know, at the same time trying to be really calm and smart and make good decisions. And you just, I'm not making good decisions. So that always, like I said about the Eckhart Tolle stuff, that was one of the best things that was given to me, was the don't think about the future or the past because they don't exist. And that took me a while to really get that in. They do exist, but then realizing they don't. They once did and they once will, but they don't right now. So once I got that, I was like, oh, I could use this to my advantage in my just kind of that I don't want to think about things because they start to stress me out. In about 2011, I got shingles, very old people's disease.
Yeah.
Weird for a young person to get it, but it caused an autoimmune disease to take over in my body called Addison's disease, which is low cortisol. So I was basically had no stress hormone left, and that it actually started, it sent me to become a bit of a narcolept where if I worried about anything, I would just fall asleep really, really quickly. And that changed my whole life. I had to quit my job because I couldn't work. I couldn't stop sleeping. I had to, I got chronic fatigue syndrome for it, but
all right.
I had to move. I had to go and stay in a friend's caravan because I couldn't afford to pay my rent because I wasn't working. And then I changed my whole career. In that sense, I had to take jobs where I could do it, where I could also fall asleep when I needed to, which is a really hard job to find. But I did find one, which ended up taking me to Gogglebox, which is really weird. But
what was the job?
The job was living as a living carer for a man with a disability who needed medication twice a day and to be fed six times a day and to have his blood checked probably 12 times a day. So I found living with him, being there, I could do all of those things and sleep in between, like fall asleep for an hour, have an alarm, wake me up, make him some food, give him his insulin or check his bloods and go back to sleep again. you know, because he was self-sufficient every other way.
Wow, so that's a – yeah. So so did you, like, recover then, obviously, from – like, was it while with him?
Yeah. Yeah, it took years and years of endocrinologists and things like that, and then going Eastern medicines, you know, kind of having a bit of a team of East and West, you know, working for me together, you know, ended up with an integrated doctor, so someone that does East and Western medicine at the same time. And that's when it really started to – but funnily enough, the Alchemist and the Eckhart Tolle books really, really helped, because there was this reoccurring thing. They kept saying you have – because you have Addison's disease, which is the loss of cortisol, which means your stress hormone is so depleted, you have to learn how to calm yourself. You have to learn how to not worry. And both of those books were very instrumental. Without even knowing that that was what was to come, I already had the foundations of these two books there, which I just had to go back and reference again. So incredible that they worked.
Wow.
Yeah. That's why I still look at The Alchemist as like, wow, it's still – there's still things coming out of this book that keep changing, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I've got to be honest, that's some pretty intense closeness with that and with that whole idea. Because obviously all spiritual things really do come back to that idea of being in the moment and letting go of all that stuff. So, but you've had such a real lived-in experience of the need for that.
Yes, that's right. And I've spoken to not many people about that kind of thing. It was such a difficult period of my life. And funnily enough, not funnily enough, but it makes a lot of sense. I lost a lot of memories from that time. Like, I can't remember. I don't have timelines because I was asleep so much of the time. And the rest of the time when I was awake, I was just kind of not really there. It took, you know, I had friends would say to me after that period, you know, I've never seen you like that. I've never, ever seen you so spaced out, like just not really with it. And it was everything I could do just to stay in the moment. It was the only place I could feel comfortable, was to stay just in the moment, not worry about anything else but what I had to do right then, right now.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
how many years was this?
That was, I think, 5 years or 4 years.
Oh, damn.
4 years of hardcore. No, 2 years of hardcore, and then two more years of maybe half of that intensity, and then it started to get better and better and better.
So it really was like where you came out of that and you basically got this lucky gig, this lucky break, I guess, for Gogglebox and stuff. It was almost straight after that.
Yeah, well, I was living with Tom and doing that gig when my friend rang and said, I think this is going to be something that you can do from home. And I was
It was actually like you were saying that it was a good opportunity for you, it was something
that I literally could do from home, not have to get up and go to a job that I knew I wasn't going to do. I was going to, because every time I tried to work, I would let people down and I'd look like a flake, and I wasn't. I was like, I don't know how, because people, when you have an autoimmune disease of so many different kinds, but especially that one in particular, people just thought I was fat and lazy. You know, I would have thought the same thing.
Like, I know, I'm hoping it's okay to joke about it now, but the idea of just being at work and someone just falls asleep, you'd be like, what the?
Yeah.
What is this chick doing? Like,
so I had some jobs that were okay. They would allow me to go and have more than a lunch break, where I would be able to go and lie down in another room or something and just fall, because I'd fall asleep so quickly, and it would be like that power nap. It would give me energy to wake up again and get going, but then have to fall asleep again. Like, I was sleeping at the worst, I was sleeping 18 hours in a 24-hour period. And it was it's just a waste of, you know, to have a sickness like that, that is very invisible as well. You look normal. The disability is not in any way obvious.
You're just sleeping.
You just look really lazy.
Sleeping. Yeah, he looks so lazy, like, because it's so unfair. Because if you're not looking at it, because you can still eat and stuff, so you're probably like sitting there, everyone's like,
yeah, can still do
all
the
people
be
judging
things.
You. They're like, oh, yeah. Look at her.
Yeah. And then you could have bouts of energy, and people are like, you're fine. And you're like, no, I'm just fine for an hour. Like, this is amazing. And you get really excited, and then you try to do more things, and then that would actually make you regress.
Trigger.
Yeah, that would make it worse. So then you had to start figuring that out as well. There was this whole thing, you know, figuring out the whole mathematics of it, of how long have I got, you know, if I've got a bit of energy to be excited, you know, going for a really big walk felt so amazing. But realizing after a while what that was going to do, and it was the only time that exercise with chronic fatigue and Addison's, it's the only time exercise does, it actually makes it worse. So that was a hard one to convince people, because I already didn't like exercising, and people are like, oh, you've just found a loophole to get out of it. I'm like, I know, but I haven't.
Oh, that's so very rough. That just looks so... You're just sleeping and you're like, no, I can't exercise because of my disease. It and it's like, you just makes it worse. You're just sleeping all day.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. You'd need so many doctor certificates to convince people.
Oh, I know. I ended up on a disability support thing and a carer's pension all at the same time. It was such a weird – that also took a lot of stress away as well, just knowing that, you know, I didn't have to worry about bills, because living with him also, I didn't have to pay rent. The rent was in lieu of looking after him. So it was this really great situation, and it worked so well. I ended up staying with him for 8 years. Way after I got better, I just really enjoyed his company and the whole situation.
Oh, so you guys got along. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we got along really well. Right. I mean, this, at the time, I think when I met him, he was a 30-year-old Down syndrome man who loved to go out to the pub for dinner, and he would last about an hour because he'd get so bored. So it was perfect for me, because I couldn't stay out for more than an hour before I'd need to go home to go to bed. So we were like, oh, we're a perfect little couple here.
All right. Okay.
And that's when
he was young as well.
Yeah. So I think he turns 40 next year, which is very weird. I can't believe he's having his 40th after knowing him at his 30th. It's when I first met him. But, yeah, that's how we ended up with Angie in the house. So I convinced Angie had moved to Melbourne from Queensland, and she was struggling with Sydney. Sydney is a bitch of a city to live in, especially if you're not rich and you don't have a full-time job. So I said to her, come and, you know, we've got another room. Like, the whole house was, the model was two people doing this job. So you didn't have to do all of the lion's share, which is what I was doing until we filled this other room. And Angie came and started living with us. The three of us, we really were the three amigos. We would do everything together, and just we started fostering dogs at the time. We would have up to 8 dogs in our house. It was crazy, because Tom loved dogs and we loved dogs. So we had this amazing house. And then Gogglebox came along, and we actually thought Tom would be on the couch with us when we started, but the production didn't want him. They were like, no, we don't want to be that show with a disability. You know, they were already kind of, I guess, starting on the back foot. You know, critics had already reviewed this show before they'd even seen it, saying, this is the most ridiculous concept ever. Like, people watching TV and, you know, us watching them watch it, like, how ridiculous. This is not going to work. That the EP said, oh, we don't want to have someone with a disability on the show, because they'll be, you know, the critics will be like, oh, look at them trying to get, you know, that,
score
that kind of sympathy. Yeah, score points, yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Tom was always in his room when we'd be filming, and it was hilarious because he'd come out with his iPad and he'd be filming us with his iPad going, action. And then we'd go, Tom, go back to your room, stop making so much noise. So he'd go back to his room and be watching the footy or something really boring like that. And sometimes we'd hear him, yeah, and the producer in the other room would be like, Tom, you got to be quiet. We can hear it all on the audio. So, yeah, it was a very, very funny time, and everything just fit really,
everything
really
just
well.
Fell into – it actually linked together. Well, that's like – that's really nice.
Yeah.
I'm happy to hear that, and that's quite a journey you did go on. So I think it you was, can claim a journey, not just to the kitchen.
And it was funny because when Angie went in to be the Bachelorette after I'm a Celebrity, the one thing I gave, I thought, I don't know what to give her. I want to give her something, a note, you know, something written and say, you know, you're going to be amazing. And just because when you're in those kind of shows, you're not allowed to have any contact with the outside world. So we were going to go 12 weeks without speaking to each other after speaking to each other every single day of our lives that we'd known each other. So I gave her The Alchemist. I gave her my copy of The Alchemist.
Oh.
And said, read this. Make sure you read it on in your downtime because it will help you get through this experience. So oh.
It's spreading. You're spreading it to going. Other people. It's still going. We're going to have to. That's beautiful. I'm really enjoyed hearing that. It's glad to hear it's connecting as well. But I guess we're going to have to call it there on that lovely note.
We could talk forever. Sorry. It's forever.
Well, yeah, you kind of had to jump out of it. So, but no, that's really sweet. That's a really nice story you got there. So, I ask at the end of the show, what kind of, did you feel like you've gotten new connections with the book? But it sounds like that's kind of been what the show's been about this time. You realized it already.
Yeah. And I honestly believe that book will continue with me for the rest of my life and keep presenting new things.
No, it's beautiful. So, and I hope it does as well. But yeah, thank you so much for being on the show. You've been a real delight, honestly.
Oh, you're so welcome. And thank you for having me. That was a lot of fun.
No worries. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you want to help support this show and all the other shows we do here at Sans Pants Radio, then why not subscribe to SansPantsPlus.com? For as little as $5 a month, you could have access to a whole bunch of bonus shows and content. Once again, that's SansPantsPlus.com.